Welcome back to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. Kevin Wooster is with us now. You can find his blog, sdpb.org/Wooster, every week on the website. Every week he joins us here on In the Moment for a conversation about what's on his mind and what he's working on. Kevin, welcome back.
Happy to be with you, Lori.
All right, so I'm reading this one, and we're kind of continuing some of our conversation from last week, which was is well worth continuing as America still sort of struggles with what to do about mass shootings, particularly school shootings. So it's still on your mind, and as it should be.
It is, yeah. I think it's on everybody's mind. I've spoken with people, and they get teary-eyed when they talk about it, you know. And I think we all did that after some of the other horrid shootings as well, you know. It sneaks up on you, and even after the fact, days, it's still there. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we talked a little bit last week, and I got emotional on the air when I was dropping a grandson that we're raising off at the school, which is just a little neighborhood school, wonderful old brick building in the neighborhood a few blocks away, and where, you look at that differently. You look at every school, I think, differently when one of these things happens. And then the question we always have is, do you just go back to the world again, the way it was? Does time move us on? And as we see, the National Rifle Association today in D.C. is trying to move us on, you know, trying to show that the resistance is going to be every bit as strong as it was after all the other mass shootings. Now we go ahead and see what happens. But we certainly carry this heaviness with us, as I expressed last week and I'm expressing in my column, because it's so personal.
And in the column, I think you do a really fine job of acknowledging the complexity of the topic. So, you know, when you go on your social media feed, there are a lot of people who have something to say, and they say this would solve it, this wouldn't solve it. And you acknowledge that and say that it's not just one thing that needs to happen, but it's not nothing that needs to happen as well.
You know, people say, well, you're going to do this, you know, and they come up with these, which I consider to be kind of specious arguments, that if you take away the assault weapon, people will start killing people with bombs. They'll use trucks. They'll use knives, you know, and you can certainly do all that. And it's a game of whack-a-mole, they say, and I say play the game, you know, whack 'em as many as you can. And if you have, I don't know that we're in a position where we're going to be able to go back to an assault weapon ban, but it seemed to be having some benefits in lives, the one we had. I understand it's very controversial, but at least we should have that conversation, a real conversation, because these guns show up so often and so many. I've never owned one. I can't imagine why anybody would want one. I think they're ugly guns. I don't know why you'd want a gun that looks that way. That's not the kind of guns I, you know, wanted to have and have had my whole life.
You mean the AR-15?
Yeah, I mean, it's just so military-looking.
Right. Well, that's why, don't you think, Kevin?
Yeah. And I mean, it's made to look like the ones that they use.
So I'm going to throw this out here for the conversation. Jonathan Ellis was on the Junkies yesterday, and you know him, and he said, you know, he wasn't speaking about what should be done or what shouldn't be done, but he said he's not quite as nervous around some of the military-style weapons because he was in the military. And I had this thought that my time, that's the only one I know how to fire. I mean, I understand it really, really well. So, and
sure.
I don't own one.
Sure.
But if you handed me one, I would know how to take it apart, break it down. So there are a lot of veterans who say, you know, and I think that might be part of why they want one, because they understand it as a weapon. They're going to target shoot with it. You know, it's not used for hunting. But it is used for recreation. I don't know what you would use, you know, marksmanship.
Yeah, and actually some people that I know argue that it is a good gun for hunting coyotes.
Okay.
It's swift handling. You can put a lot of rounds on target, a moving target. And it's some people argue it's a delightful weapon in the field. And I don't understand that, and I've got a good friend, John Cooper, in Pierre, who's the former Game Fish and Park Secretary, a former federal warden, and a former, riverboat commander in Vietnam, who carried these weapons on and off the boat, and who can't understand it any more than I can. So I think there, you know, he said when he got rid of that gun, he never wanted to see it again. He wrote a compelling piece in the letter to the editor, which I think is going to make the rounds from the Pierre Capital Journal. And he says when he looks at them, I'm not going to war with wildlife. Why would you want one of those in the field to be that way? And I understand what you're saying, too. But this is a conversation we need to have, and we need to have it seriously. And we need to look at, certainly nobody needs a 100-round extended capacity magazine in your gun for any reason, do you? I mean, and Cooper in his letter suggested a 5-round maximum. Maybe if it's a 10-round maximum. But one of the things that at least these guys that go in there have to change those magazines, and maybe they mess up, and maybe it gives somebody their time to jump them. I mean, all of these things need to be looked at because it's everything. Sure, mental health. Sure, security. I suppose we can talk about arming teachers, but that's asking a lot of teachers, don't you think?
It was interesting to watch that conversation in Florida and how so many people immediately said no. And then you have an understanding of, you know, the situation here in South Dakota and what a lot of teachers are saying about that as well. You say something here at the end of your column that I think is really interesting and worth diving into, and that is the notion that we have to give up something and that we need to talk about giving up something. Everything should be on the table, and we need to be willing to come together and say, what am I willing to give up? And that's not a conversation you hear a lot in American politics or, you know, necessarily around the water cooler. What do we need to give up?
Well, you don't. And you know, I've got 9 guns, and I really, they all mean something to me. You know, they've been acquired over a lifetime. Some belong to my dad, who's long passed, and my former father-in-law, who's gone, and my cousin Tom, who's gone, and everyone means to me, and they're full of memories. As I said in there, I would give them all up. I'd take them down tomorrow if I could just save one of those kids.
Right.
Just one of those kids. You know, but you can't. And nobody expects us to give up all our guns. We're talking about whether we can put up with restrictions, and we can have a little more complication when we go through the process of a background check. And are we willing to pay more in tax money for more school counselors and more people to help out, to spend money on better security systems for schools? But also, somebody may have to give up the 100-round magazine. Somebody may have to give up a weapon that they like, and at least consider that. How much are we willing to give up to save lives? You know, and somebody touched on something we can't forget here on this mass shooting. There was a African-American man that rose in the White House. And just remember, my son was shot and killed walking home from school.
Right.
And these school shootings are horrible, and he was very sympathetic. But, you know, he basically said every day kids are dying one and two at a time outside of school where it's dangerous walking through the neighborhood with guns. And so let's not forget about those either. And those are handguns. Those aren't assault weapons. So there's so much to talk about, but we got to talk.
Yeah.
We got to give some, people have to be prepared to give something up.
And we have to listen. That's the other thing, is people have
to
be willing.
We absolutely have to listen, because you're right. There's all kinds of talking going on, but right. Not a lot of listening. And I was a little encouraged by President Trump being willing to look at some things that I wasn't sure he'd look at. Marco Rubio last night was willing to look at some things that he hadn't been willing to look at. That's what we have to do, be willing to look at things we've been rigid on up until now.
Marco Rubio showed up. And I think that's a hard thing to do.
Very
hard.
He got beat up. You know, he got booed a lot. And he hung in there, and he had the courage. I love politicians who have the courage to say, maybe I'll change my mind, even if it's going to hurt me politically.
Yeah. Kevin Wooster, the blog, sdpb.org/Wooster. I'm sure people who are listening have things to say about this, and we encourage you to say them. Reach out and comment on that blog and contact us, and let's keep the conversation going. Kevin, thank you so much for being here. We appreciate your time, as always.
Thank you, Laura.